people drilling holes in our pipe. Drilling holes. Now they didn't know that we didn't have oil in the pipe at the time, but had they would have found out in a very, very bad way. And so, it's just we're combating something that's relatively new, but it's all of our problems. We were slow to respond. I think I mentioned to you, Dan, when we talked earlier, that we were slow to respond to social media. We had a CEO, me, that was kind of out of touch with that a little bit, behind on that, and we don't do that anymore. We monitor social media, and there's constant lies being said about our company that we're having to police.
If you can talk about... Ann Ralphus, if you can respond to what Kelsey Warren said, the CEO of Energy Transfer Partners, who he was referring to.
In Louisiana, we are standing up to stop their pipeline. There's nobody who has their hands on the equipment, who is fooling with the equipment, and I think that's really a distraction from the issue. You know, we understand who the violent party is. And the violent party is Energy Transfer Partners. Yes, some people have taken particular action along other pipeline routes to stop the pipeline. That has happened, but that has been very rare. And what we are doing in Louisiana is peaceful civil disobedience that is within our rights, right? And I should say that, there is a reason people are taking action like that, because the systems that are supposed to be protecting us are clearly failing, as we're seeing in Louisiana.
There's a protest outside Cipriani's today.
Yes.
Where U.S. Bank is being
Yes.
honored. Why?
Because U.S. Bank is receiving an award for being a good corporate citizen, when in fact they are funding and fueling the violence by Energy Transfer Partners. So we'll be there to encourage U.S. Bank to keep the promise that it once made not to fund the pipeline, because it's their cash flow that's perpetuating the harm and the abuse in Louisiana. I mean, we have serious violations happening already in our state, where they are going in and chopping down cypress that are hundreds of years old, where they are going into a community that is already overwhelmed by pollution, that is already overwhelmed by racism, and adding to that problem.
And Pastor Harry Joseph, what are you hoping to get accomplished in your presence here and in continuing protests there?
Well, I'm hoping somebody listening, somebody hears that we already have enough in our community, and we don't need nothing else, because we have people that's living there now that trying to figure out how they're going to get out, because people there, we're not rich, we are poor people, and they have already barred the white out. And we as blacks are there wondering what we're going to do, because we got to raise our kids and we have our children coming up sick. So they got a lot of people that would love to get out of this community, because there are no other things are coming in.
Well, we have to leave it there, but we will certainly continue to follow the story. Pastor Harry Joseph, Ann Ralphus of Louisiana Bucket Brigade, and Pamela Spies of the Center for Constitutional Rights. And we have this breaking news. President Trump has just fired Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and replaced him with CIA Director Mike Pompeo. Trump announced CIA's Deputy Director Gina Haspel will be tapped to succeed Pompeo at the CIA. The Intercept reports Gina Haspel was directly involved in the CIA's torture program under George W. Bush. She was responsible for running a secret CIA black site in Thailand where prisoners were waterboarded and tortured. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
High, but not too high. This is George Carlin. I'm sitting here. I have on a yellow hat, a pink shirt, dark sunglasses, and an earring in my ear. And I'm going to tell you not to get into heavy drugs. Well, it sounds bizarre, I know, but there are other things to do with your life, other things to help you make it. Heavy drugs make it all worse, and they help you die.
Ladies and gentlemen, our oceans are in trouble. Careless activities by people at sea and on land have created the dire state of the oceans today. Routine activities on land and water contribute to 6.4 million tons of debris entering the ocean every year. If you care, you will go to www.keepoceansclean.org and see what you can do to make a difference. Thank you.
And you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. The time is 6:02. Time, once again, for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. Did we survive the blizzard again, and the next series?
I'm not sure if we all survived. Well, a lot of people were afraid of things, but I don't think it was as serious. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't think the truth survived. I think that's what happened. I think what you've seen today is the most unforgivable act of fictionalized news, fake news, if you will.
Fake weather.
Revisionism. Yeah, we were told when we were preparing to come into the station that it was impassable, almost impossible, that things were dire, that people were slipping and falling. And when we actually got onto the roads, there was no snow on the road at all. None. Not even a coating. Nothing. The roads were all clear all the way here. And people are still talking about, well, I don't know if I can make it in because it's the weather. There's no weather, people. I don't know where there is weather, but there is no weather here. So just get that out of your minds. It's fake. It's false. Didn't happen. Isn't happening. Won't happen.
It is not the threat you think it is.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's just, I shouldn't be surprised. I shouldn't be surprised. But I am a bit shocked.
Yeah. Shocked that people want a snow day?
Shocked but not surprised.
They want it more than anything else.
Can I do that? Can I be shocked and not be surprised? I think if you have sort of a dull shockness threshold, you can be. I'm just in a state of perpetual shockness.
I'm not sure. We'll have to go back through that, break it down, and, you know...
Break it down, man. I am there. Tell me what you want broken down. I will show up with a bat.
We'll just... run those definitions again and, you know, make sure we know.
It's time. It's time to tear things up. It's
terms.
Time to...
Wait, no, I was talking about language. What?
Language? Do I need a bat for that?
I don't think we're talking about the same thing.
I just want to tear something up. I just want to knock it down and
not,
start over. Or maybe not even start over. Just tear it down.
Well, I mean, you know, why?
It feels good. It really does feel good, man. You got to try it. You got to try it. Once you get the bat lifted up, that's the hard part. It becomes easy after that. But, okay, so, yeah. Speaking of things being torn apart, torn asunder. So, Tillerson's out. Trump fired Rex Tillerson today.
Uh-huh.
He said, Rex, go fetch. And he didn't throw a stick. And Rex just kept running.
Poor Rex.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to tell dog jokes. I'm sorry, but...
Rex is kind of a dog name. You're not wrong for using... his name that way, but yeah, he's becoming a private person again.
I won't be sobbing into my pillow tonight, and I'll tell you why. Because while the way Trump has handled this, like everything else, has been bad, all the words I want to use I can't say on the air, Rex Tillerson was not somebody that I ever thought was qualified to be Secretary of State. Ever. And I really resent having an oil tycoon talking to me as a citizen, talking to the country about foreign policy, which he knows nothing about. Or not more than anybody else, let's put it that way. So, you know, to have him telling us why we can't go to North Korea and all of the other things that he purported to know about, it was just very insulting. But of course, you know, when you consider who appointed him and who is going to be appointing the next Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, we'll get to him in a second. It doesn't really matter. It really doesn't matter because they're all going to suck.
Yeah, their choices are peculiar, but I guess we could laud them for removing this guy. But I don't know, someone from the intelligence community, is that really someone you want in state? I'm not sure.
Well, you know, it kind of doesn't even matter anymore. I mean, with all the nonsense that's been going on, you can have the guy who was running the CIA be the Secretary of State while he is still running the CIA, and people will just kind of shrug and say, yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter anymore anyway. But, director of the Central Intelligence Agency until about a little over a year ago, January of 2017. He was director of the CIA, now this is going to be our Secretary of State. It's yeah, he's got that whole specter of secret prisons under his belt and all kinds of questions that won't be asked.
Yeah, this other person that's going to be filling his spot, Gina, I don't know her last name.
Oh, I didn't get to that.
Yeah, yeah. She was also, I think, involved in some of the black sites. The thing that CNN's been talking about is Thailand. She had some hand in the operation of a facility in Thailand.
Well, okay, but the important thing...
Where torture was...
Well, I don't want to minimize occurring. This. I want to focus on what's important here. You know, we're talking about Secretary of State. We're talking about a very important position, our standing in the world.
Our outward-facing... Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Representative, leaders.
So in answer to the question that most people have... Mike Pompeo is a lifetime member of and has been endorsed by the National Rifle Association. So,
oh, well,
we're safe. We're safe. You know, everything is cool.
Relieved.
They approve. Yeah. They think this is good. And as long as they think it's good. All right. And don't ask any questions. You see how quickly Trump backed off? You know, a week and a half ago, he said, you know, I'm going to stand up to the NRA if I don't agree with them. And then he met with them, and all of a sudden he agrees with everything they say.
Yeah, and refuses to do anything that challenges them and continues to walk back his commitment to be active and do anything.
So shameful, so incredibly shameful, just seeing how, you know, he basically entertained the ideas, the requests that the students had to actually look at something meaningful. Sounded like he took them seriously for, you know, a few minutes anyway. And then just completely slammed the door on them and just went with more guns, armed the teachers, and I'm not going to raise the age to buy assault weapons. We're not going to do any of this, any of the reforms that we were talking about, you know?
The real reforms.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really shame, but it's predictable. It's what everybody said was going to happen. It's just, you know, it's kind of weird that... the script was followed so closely.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a tried and true method. It's been used over and over with these events. And the fall guy this time is the president, you know, to be that social chameleon in the immediate aftermath and then to pivot from a position of empathy and understanding and solidarity to now... changing, I would say, allegiance entirely because, you know, he supports the students and the victims and people who would like to see some real change in this area insofar as it helps his persona publicly or politically. But it's pretty galling to see where his actual loyalties are, you know, after meetings and so on and you know, getting... basically a couple of weeks or so, you know, distance from the aftermath. And, you know, when it comes to action, there's you know, not as much inertia, momentum or anything.
Yeah, no, it's sad. But, you know, it's also kind of like fuel for the outrage for people to say no more. This is enough of this. And you're starting to see, you're continuing to see that. We've been seeing it now for quite a while, and we're seeing it build with this student movement coming out of the Parkland shooting. I don't think it's going to fly this time. I really don't think it's going to fly. I think people are seeing through all the kowtowing to the NRA, and it's high time.
Yeah, long overdue to actually look and go through the sort of granular parts of how we look at weaponry like this. And, you know, it takes time. It takes actually looking at it and evaluating it. And so far, there just has not been the kind of will to do that. And I really hope that... we get a swell of enthusiasm for some kind of reforms. And the more I hear about the AR-15 and the kind of weapons that are being used, and I think a good comparison was on one of the late night shows, they were talking about the kind of training that they're demanding of teachers, and the irony of an 18-year-old who just wants to buy one and, you know, isn't a teacher.
Uh-huh.
Also, the sort of counterintuitiveness of arming people who are agents of the state, you know, educators and so on. There was a lot of great commentary this week about sort of the absurdity of some of the laws they are passing, and how, you know, if someone is working for a public school, they're an agent of the state, then you arm them. That is a form of the very tyranny that amendment was supposed to address.
Now, tomorrow is a student walkout that's taking place nationwide.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's happening, I believe, at 10 in the morning, and schools nationwide. So it's going to be really an interesting day as far as that goes.
People should be talking to students. They should be asking them, you know, what their plans are and what their perspectives are, what their schools are telling them. It'd be really cool to hear some of the local perspectives and, you know, find out just how different districts and parts of the country are dealing with it and the attitudes for some kind of reform and action, immediate action, uh-huh. You know, something that is lasting and effective and, you know, not, you know, just about buying a bunch of fresh weapons.
Right, right. So now here's what I've seen so far on the walkout. It's a 17-minute walkout. That's what we're talking about tomorrow, 10 a.m.
That's because of the 17 students.
17 students.
Got
yes,
it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you know, it's really not for that long. But the amount of fuss and chaos that's being brought up as a result of this is really kind of stunning. Here's a piece from Newsday. Schools on Long Island nationwide are performing a delicate dance as they work both to allow and control student-led walkouts. Allow and control. Wow, it's not much of a walkout if it's allowed or controlled, but whatever.
Is this story about a prison riot?
Might as well be. Student government leaders and top administrators in districts across Nassau and Suffolk counties have negotiated to hammer out details in search of a balance that permits student activism while ensuring safety for the demonstration, which is planned, as we said, at 10 a.m. Okay, so right away, that sentence bugs me, safety, walking out of a door. Okay, so Wednesday's walkout, 17 minutes, symbolic of the number of students and staff members slain that day, has been promoted by multiple organizations across many social media sites for nearly 3 weeks. Mention of it often has been paired with notices for the March for Our Lives, set for March 24th in Washington, D.C. More on that in shows to come.
Yeah, I believe we were seeing 500,000 people.
That's what they're expecting in D.C., 500,000 people.
Planned numbers they're looking at.
That is going to be amazing. And not just in D.C., all around the country.
Yeah, there's going to be satellite marches.
Former Stoneman Douglas student Nicholas Cruz, who police said used a semi-automatic AR-15 rifle in his rampage through the school, has been indicted on 34 counts of premeditated murder, attempted murder. He's being held without bond. Today they announced they were going to seek the death penalty. Regardless, 10 a.m., March 14th, this is what Hampton Bays Superintendent Lars Clemenson says. 10 a.m., March 14th, I'm responsible for 2,064 kids. I can't have them just marching out of the school without a plan in place.
Hmm. Sounds like they have a plan.
Well, yeah, okay. Depends where they go. Depends where they're going when they march out of school. Sounds like they have a plan, Lars. They got the plan. Let the kids, you know, dictate the plan for a change. Calm down. Don't worry so much.
Just ask them what the plan is. It seems like you got your answer right there.
In his district, school-sponsored activities include a social studies lesson plan for high school students that explores the role of civil disobedience in society. That's great, but don't let that be instead of engaging in civil disobedience. You see, because you're not really learning much that way by not participating and just reading a textbook. Now some administrators say they're still deliberating on plans in their districts. A senior at Hewlett High School said that after the shooting, fear was rampant with students sharing their own versions of school escape plans and flinching at sounds. It's right here in Long Island. This student and others, many of whom have gone to a sleepaway camp with victims and survivors of the Parkland shooting, have discussed with administrators the specifics of Wednesday's walkout, such as whether students will face discipline or if the tributes would be safer indoors.
They went to a camp with the students?
Apparently, at some point they did.
Interesting.
But, you know, having the tribute indoors, that's not really a walkout, is it? You know, you kind of want to have something that demonstrates your outrage and your awareness of what's going on.
I was just going to add the absurdity of the rule or the thing at hand, or, you know, the sort of controlling of something that is about authority relinquishing that control and actually the student voices seizing it and directing it with this statement.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's something that really kind of perturbs me. This is a sentence from that article. In the Plainview Old Bethpage School District, that's over in Nassau County, administrators will permit a tribute on campus that will be secured by officers from the Nassau County Police Department. Okay. You will permit a tribute on campus. What the hell? People are walking out at 10 a.m. nationwide, and you will permit a tribute on campus, and then secured by officers in the Nassau County Police Department? What kind of, you said prison camp before, is that what you're running, a prison camp? You need cops to secure this? This is the problem. You are pointing out the problem better than the people walking out will be pointing out the problem. You know, it's when we have high schools that need cops to secure anything, there's something wrong with that. There's something seriously wrong with that. And unfortunately, that is becoming the reality. And we can't accept that. The minute we accept that, it becomes normal. This is not normal. Now, that district will also hold lockdown drills at its two middle schools and the high school in each of the school day's 9 periods, covering evacuation plans, barriers, and where students can hide.
What a joke.
You're going to do that on the day of the walkout? You're going to have lockdown drills and tell students where they can hide? You know, this is part of the problem. This is a big part of the problem. You know, there was a school, I saw this on Twitter, where they were saying, don't worry, it's only a drill. They were playing sounds of guns so kids would know what they sound like and what they can do when they hear that sound. No, this is not acceptable. This is not what we should be living through. That has to stop. And don't tell us it's impossible to stop it. Yeah, it's possible to stop it. It was possible to start it. It's possible to stop it. And we let this happen. We let this gun proliferation occur so that we have a situation where we don't control it anymore. We don't have any control. We have to take it back. And it's been done in other parts of the world. You know, it's been done in Australia. It's been done in Scotland. It's been done in most civilized countries, actually. And they're fine. They're doing good. And we can do it as well. You know, we have to start with these assault weapons. We have to get them off the street. We have to get them out of the hands of people that have no use for them, which is everybody. Or we have to rethink what this country is all about.
Yes. And not be talked down by, like, gun fetishists.
Yeah, that's what they are.
They really are. It is. It's, you know, fetish and a glorification of stuff that is way too powerful. And accessibility. The proliferation is exactly it. There's just far too many of them.
Well, I don't know why we listen to these people as if they are the experts. You know, the people that want to collect all these arsenals, that is not something that ties into who we are as a society. You know, join the army, join the National Guard if you're into that. Join a shooting club, whatever. There's all kinds of ways you can express your passion and enjoy your hobbies without creating a public danger, which is exactly what you're doing when you collect this kind of armaments in your home. And inevitably, they fall into the hands of the wrong people, or you become one of the wrong people. This is not something that that we should ever accept as normal. And unfortunately, when you have situations like this, where kids are being told how to hide from the sound of gunfire in their schools, you know, you have to look at that as the real problem that needs immediate addressing. And you know, unfortunately, we have a president who thinks the way of doing that is to inject more guns into the situation. clearly more people are realizing that is nonsense.
Yeah, it's sort of the antithesis of what parenting is. You know, you're creating a bubble of safety, a place to grow up and you know, have supervision or have that kind of insulation from the harsh realities out there. And here we are conditioning children with you know, violent hypotheticals and even sound effects and so on. It's really, really just the wrong, it seems like the wrong direction to be going. You know, how do you go back from that when, you know, you have young people that are facing this kind of reality and then, you know, you just wander off and have fun? I mean, you become a guarded person. You become a person that is traumatized, I think, just by the fear that's, you know, ingrained by all this training. You know, it ought not be that the students have to bear this and kind of live this dual life of you know, comfort and security that you know, any kid growing up could expect. And then this, you know, this sort of paramilitary drills and so on. And of course, that is, you know, being used instead of the ability to speak up and speak out about this and some of the real systemic problems with, as we've said, access and that kind of stuff. You know, you're squelching the real singular way that people actually can affect the policies and availability in their community, and that's really just, as I said, the antithesis of what this issue I think really needs.
Now, yeah, I'm reading through this article and seeing all kinds of statements from administrators that are really bugging me, because they're basically they're trying to control the situation in a way that seems really inappropriate. Here's from Huntington, principal of Huntington High School, Brendan Kuzak, says an absence from class will not be considered an excused absence. Students may not disrupt the educational process and may not infringe upon the rights of others who choose not to participate. Okay, how in God's name is that, it's walking out of class for 17 minutes, infringing on the rights of other students? You know, it's a statement. It's a highly educational experience that these kids are involved in. You should be embracing this, not forbidding it. Any walkout will be monitored by school staff, and a staging area on campus will be provided. Students may not leave campus at any time during this event. I'm not sure what they mean by campus, the front lawn or whatever. I mean, to me, that's a walkout. If you walk out the door and you're on the front lawn, you're still on campus. It seems like, you know, there's nothing to really worry about here. People are basically walking out of the building. And let's not freak out over that. Now, in Rocky Point, the superintendent, Michael Ring, get this. He sent a letter to the community saying that organized student-led building walkouts, such as those being discussed nationally via social media, are not a viable option for our schools. No Rocky Point student will be permitted to leave the premises as part of any of these upcoming events without appropriate permission. Well, Michael, I hope that every Rocky Point student at 10 a.m. tomorrow walks out the building and shows you something as far as freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of expression. Maybe you need to learn something about that. Walking out of a building is completely appropriate for expressing outrage at an outrageous situation.
Yeah, I think they're just basically overcompensating here on the, you know, grounds of just basically covering their institutions, you know, making sure they're not liable for anything. I would say that, or predict in practice, this is probably not going to have very much in the way of teeth. We'll hear about it. I'm sure we'll get reports. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear about your experience walking out, or if you are an administrator and you feel it's appropriate to control and enforce all of this kind of stuff when young people are actually very interested in the democratic process and their voice in it.
Yes. And if you're a student out there, whether it's on Long Island or anywhere in the country, I can't emphasize enough the importance of taking part in actions like this. Because these are the things you remember for the rest of your life. These are the things that you take with you that make you realize that, I believe in freedom of speech. I believe in standing up for what I think is important, even when there is a threat of a penalty involved. That is what democracy is all about all the time. If you're worried about actions that are taken against you, if there are actions taken against you, guaranteed they'll be worth it. But I think in the vast majority of cases, there will not be any actions taken because of the number of people participating and because of the black eye that anybody would receive from a public relations perspective if they actually punished students for standing up and saying something, as they will tomorrow morning.
Yeah. The policies, I think, just putting this out here and being a bit like leaning in and a bit aggressive with guidelines for leading up to this kind of action. But in practice, I feel like this is a lot of real overbearing talk, just to avoid any backlash from the sort of parents that would disagree or outraged by the thought of a school allowing this kind of thing to happen, which, great, let them be aghast. I mean, this is part of our process, and if students are organized and want to take 17 whole minutes, would be part of, like half of a lunch break or something, it's really not that much time. I think they're going to have to listen to them more so than, try to control and silence them, because it just won't go well. I mean, there's just way too many cameras and too much interest in this, and I'm really excited to see what happens.
Yeah, the reaction that I'm seeing from so many administrators and principals and things like that, they are proving the point. They are proving the point of how restrictive and controlling an environment schools have become because of the fear. Because of the fear element. And that is what these kids are speaking out against. When I went to high school, this was unthinkable. We had a walkout once. I think it was for an hour or two. But we were free to leave the campus when we didn't have classes. We could walk down and get a bagel at the local store. It wasn't unusual to be able to do that kind of a thing. And check this out. This is... this points it out better than anything else. There was a story on Friday, right here in Suffolk County. Suffolk police are investigating an incident at Smithtown High School West Friday morning involving a former student who entered the school without permission. That's it. No, did you think he entered the school without permission and attacked somebody or broke something or did something untoward? No, entered the school without permission. Okay, after I graduated high school, I remember going back a year or so later to visit. I entered the school. I didn't ask anybody. I opened the door, walked through. There I was in the school. Wow, look at that. Looks pretty much the same. Different people. Some people I recognized. I said, hi, how you doing? What are you up to? That kind of thing. Just walking in a door. Imagine that. Well, this student walked in without permission. Now, the former student entered the school with current students at 7 a.m. and was identified and questioned by school security and fled the school. Okay, we didn't have school security, for one thing. We just had a door. We had lots of doors, actually, and they were all open. And, you walked in, and obviously, if you didn't belong there, people would know pretty soon that, hey, this guy doesn't have any classes here. But maybe you just wanted to visit or you know, go down to the office and say hi to the principal and show him that you actually did make something of yourself. Who knows? But in this particular case, this guy entered at 7 a.m. with other students. So I would imagine he probably knew some of those students. Anyway, in a statement to the school community, Smithtown Central School District Superintendent James Grossane said Suffolk police were notified and responded immediately to somebody entering the building without permission. The student in question had... Wait a minute. The student in question? Okay. So he's a student then. You said he was an ex-student. Then I'm confused. The student in question has contacted the school and apologized for causing an unintended disturbance. This is now a matter for the Suffolk County Police Department. No, it's not. Somebody just wanted to hang out with his friends. Just show up at a school he used to go to and say hi. And maybe, you know, sit in on a class or something as a joke. I don't know. It is not a matter for the cops. Was the guy carrying a weapon? Was he threatening people? That's not in the story. I don't see any indication of that. But regardless, this is the problem here. You know, if somebody walks into a building without permission, all of a sudden the cops are involved. All of a sudden you're thinking the worst. Everybody is ducking for cover. This is not right. This is not normal. This is what the people are walking out about tomorrow morning. All right. Let's learn. Let's learn from that.
Yeah. The stranger danger is, it's there, but it's not everything. And you have to be able to read situations to a degree, and having this sort of hypervigilance be in everyone's mind, you tend to get additional overcompensation of a different sort. And it's no way to live, and it tends to be more of a hysterical thing than a rational response. And mm-hmm. that we need a lot more rationality in the way we look at these things.
Hey, we had a lot of phone calls last week, and if you want to call in and be a part of our conversation, you can. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. How do we solve these problems? What do we do? You know, we're in a situation now. A lot of people warned about this, you know, proliferation of weapons. You're going to wind up in a fearful society. No, not a polite society, a fearful society where, you know, if you get into a traffic altercation, let's look it up. Look up road rage and see how many of them involve shootings and see how many of those shootings involve legally registered weapons. All right. This is the result of gun proliferation. It's a sickness. It's got nothing to do with the Second Amendment. And by the way, how many of you have actually read the Second Amendment? I'm gonna get it so I don't make any mistakes. If you make one word mistake, people jump all over you. So let me get the exact quote. Could you carry on for a moment, Kyle?
Well, sure. Did you ever have senior pranks at high school?
You see, you're asking me a question, and I'm trying to find the Second Amendment.
Okay. Well, I just think that, just the overreaction and hypervigilance, it could make even, you know, April Fool's Day, you know, not a fun day anymore because, you know, you can't have humor or you can't have, people walking out or, breaking the rules a little bit. And it's, it just ingrains more conformity and less individual thinking. And that's a shame. That's something we would miss.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's the whole thing. That's the whole amendment right there. Now, it's one sentence. It's one sentence, so... That means, and I'm an English major, so I do know a thing or two about the language. That means it's all related, the same basic concept. So you can't say this section is unrelated to the other section. No, it's you know, if there's a semicolon in there or if there's a period, you could say that. So let's just get that straight right away. So a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. So we can agree that a well-regulated militia is necessary for the security of a free state, whatever you define a well-regulated militia as. And as a result of that, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So in other words, the right of the people to keep and bear arms is related to that well-regulated militia. It's right there. Now, you know, the people who purport to be Second Amendment zealots always ignore that part. They always ignore the well-regulated part. All right, well-regulated, that's a pretty concise phrase there. You know what it means. Well, it doesn't say who's regulating. Could be local authorities, could be federal authorities, could be state authorities. You know, that is open to our interpretation, obviously.
Could be your local Klan members.
Well, maybe that's true, too. Okay, you might not like who's regulating, but somebody is regulating. And what we have today is a situation where you don't have much in the way of regulation. That is the problem. All right? So, also, the right of the people to keep and bear arms is directly related to that well-regulated militia. In other words, you have some responsibility. You have some responsibility to that well-regulated militia when you have your weapons. That is what it's for, is to protect your country. All right, kind of like what they do in Switzerland, you know, where people, I think everybody has a rifle or something, is to protect your country from threats from within or from without. It's not just for your hobbies. It's not, you know, for hunting. It's not for shooting intruders, unless they're intruders, you know, from foreign countries or a part of an uprising or something like that. It's not for your fun, in other words. It's responsible behavior. That's how I read it. Now, I know there's other interpretations, but, you know, it's one sentence. It's one sentence. It's a couple hundred years old. Values have changed, but I think we get the basic sentiment of it. And it's not what you're being told by the NRA, not at all.
Yeah, it's exaggerated and molded to fit their narrative. So that's why I think you can be a supporter of your right as an American and not necessarily be a member of that organization and, you know, get discounts or whatever they used to be able to give you.
Yeah, they are not the experts. They are proponents of products. They make money. They sell arms. They sell guns.
And the vehicle is this right they use constantly.
They
destroy
this right.
Repetition is part of the brand.
You know, years ago, Wayne LaPierre, even when he was president of the NRA, said that schools should be gun-free zones. There should not be guns in schools. He was very passionate about this. The NRA helped write up gun regulation rules for the government 60 years ago.
Right.
And before that. They were reasonable. They really were. They were responsible. And what you're seeing now is nothing like that, because they are in the hands of the arms industry. And that is, you know, when imagine arming teachers in schools, which is what they're pushing for, how many new customers that is for them, you know? And you can say, yeah, NRA, they're a nonprofit organization. They're not selling guns directly. Believe me, they got their hands in the till. They are deeply connected, and there is all kinds of back and forth going on here. So they have an interest in this, and it's not in the Constitution.
I think it's also treated as like an absolute right, like any sort of gun-like object is covered, and that we know is really impractical. And the example we've used time and time again is, you know, go back to when it was written, look at the equipment and the technology of then. There were not 100-round or 30-round clips in, you know, semi-automatic pistols made out of composite resins and you know, crazy metallurgy.
Yeah, I think they would have written it a little bit differently, a different tone in their voice if AR-15s were around in 1776.
Right. They didn't have hollow points, or if they did, they were a little bit more cumbersome and, you know, not, you know, loaded into these 30-round clips. But again, the so-called experts or NRA pundits would have you think and interpret this amendment, as I said, it's a vehicle for them, as in an absolutist way, that it covers every projectile. And we know that is not everything that can hurl a projectile. And we just know that it is so much more specific when you actually break down the kinds of technology we have now. And it's just obvious that this has been long overlooked, and it is in part, you know, out of fear, as the so-called president stated, you know, that a lot of these politicians are afraid of the NRA, and they ought not to be. But that is also, I think, part of politics as it is now, and the costs involved with that, which is a side effect of allowing this industry representative to kind of co-opt something that, yes, is in our Constitution, but isn't everything. And it certainly isn't, it doesn't cover, I think, every part of their industry.
No, and it's,
as they want you to believe.
Every time you hear them point to the Second Amendment, likely they are distorting it for their own purposes. And to me, that is the real insult against the Founding Fathers, against what this nation stands for, because it sure does not stand for what we see today. And that is a lot of self-interest, not thinking about the good of the country. And it sure as hell does not make us safe from anything. I'll give you an example, okay? There was a representative from ICE, the people that are kicking in doors and dragging off families who are supposedly undocumented throughout the nation at Trump's behest. It's disgusting what I'm seeing. And it's happening in New York. It's happening everywhere. These are the jackbooted thugs of today that people are living in fear of. All right. And keep in mind, ICE is not part of the Department of Justice. They're part of Department of Homeland Security. So when Trump attacks the FBI and other federal law enforcement agencies, he's not attacking these people. These people basically follow his orders. And they are making life hell for so many people. And we're not talking about criminals. We're not talking about those criminal aliens that everybody is so afraid of. No, we're talking about families that have lived here for decades and might not have all the paperwork they need, that now all of a sudden find themselves being thrown into another country that they maybe haven't been to since they were 3 years old, and being separated maybe permanently from their family. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago right here in Setauka. There's a church that has vowed to give sanctuary to anybody facing that kind of a threat. And we certainly support that. Here's something that happened today, actually. James Schwab was the spokesman for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. He resigned over what he described as false and misleading statements made by Attorney General Jeff Sessions and ICE Acting Director Thomas Homan. He worked out of the agency's San Francisco office until he abruptly quit. He said he had been told to deflect questions about the Oakland, California mayor's interference with an ICE raid last month and to refer reporters to statements from Sessions and Homan that suggested that hundreds of criminals escaped capture in Northern California because the mayor tipped them off. I quit because I didn't want to perpetuate misleading facts. I asked them to change the information. I told them the information was wrong. They asked me to deflect. I didn't agree with that. I took some time. And I quit. And that's what they're doing. They are trying to create this this dialogue of all these criminal aliens that are out there, which isn't true.
Well, they're not doing the work of finding the criminal elements that are hiding and probably not easy to find. But they take the people that they can track, that may have registered somewhere, that they can find, that they can stalk, and labeling them as the other, as the criminal element that fits their narrative, but really they're just tossing families' homes and entangling them in immigration courts and padding to get some numbers to rationalize more of this.
Yeah. He said, I didn't feel like fabricating the truth to defend ourselves against the mayor of Oakland's actions was a way to go about it. We were never going to pick up as many people as they said we were going to pick up. To say that 100% are dangerous criminals on the street, or that those people weren't picked up because of the actions of the mayor, is just wrong. And you see how this is, these are myths that are perpetuated. But my point here is that you're seeing actions of local governments against this agency, against them swooping into their cities and taking people against the will of citizens here against the will of locally elected officials. So, okay, Second Amendment, so-called Second Amendment experts. Got our AR-15s. We've got our Constitution. Here is the tyranny swooping in. So what? Do we use the AR-15s against ICE? That's what I want to know. I've asked this question. No one ever answers. But this seems exactly what the Second Amendment addresses in their interpretation of it. Now, I say that would be foolish. That would be ridiculous. It's never going to work. You can't take up arms against an infinitely superior force, such as the federal government. But in their world, in their defense of why they need weapons like the AR-15, it's always because we have to defend ourselves against a tyrannical government. Well, we think there's a tyrannical government. Now, I know not everybody is going to agree all the time when there is a tyrannical government, and you probably don't agree that there's a tyrannical government right now. But let's say you did. Let's say it was a different perspective, and you're the ones that thought that these people should not be swooping into your neighborhood and taking your neighbors away. Okay, you've got your AR-15. Do you use it against ICE? I just want to know. And if you don't, then what are you talking about as far as you need these weapons to protect against tyranny? The tyranny is here. So what are we waiting for?
Yeah, I would say, is it because they're not white enough? Are they not rich enough?
Again, okay.
What is it?
Let's say they were white. Let's say that ICE was swooping in and only getting Norwegians.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah, Norwegian immigrants or whatever.
People, of course.
You have too much paperwork. You have too much documentation. We don't want you here anymore. Go to Mexico. You know, what if they? I don't know. I pick a scenario of your choice. The point is, you have this agency coming in against the will of the people. And I'm sorry, you might not agree with that, but it's true in places like Oakland, in places like New York, in places like Seattle. This is not what the people want. They don't want ICE coming in and taking people away. So with that in mind, do those people take up arms against the federal agency that's coming in against their will? Simple question. And if the answer is no, because what are you, crazy? That's never going to work. That's my point, too. It's never going to work no matter what side you're on. You don't need AR-15s for that. You need AR-15s to impress people, to intimidate people. Sure, I agree. Yeah, you need it for that. But that's not what it's all about. And we should not be having people walking around the streets with these things unless that scenario is somehow realistic, that the AR-15 is going to make us break away from oppression of a government that has tanks and far superior firepower. So I don't think that's how you're ever going to win.
Yeah, we've got the reasons. We got a nice long list here. So just let's coordinate, find out when the well-organized militia and forces of righteousness are going to be coordinating and let's muster and we'll get the marching orders and go from there.
Yeah, so it's also possible that, you know, amendments need updating. You know, they were written a long time ago. Nothing wrong with that. Every constitution in Europe has been rewritten in the last 100 years. Updates do happen. Now, I think most of the Second Amendment works, but maybe it could be made a little bit clearer. I mean, look at the Third Amendment. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. It basically means that soldiers can't just come into your house and live there unless you say it's okay. I mean, I guess that kind of still makes sense.
Yeah, militia members too.
But why do we need that amendment? It's kind of outdated. When's the last time that came up? You know, let's go over this and see if we can come up with something a little bit clearer. I know it's going to take forever, and there's going to be all kinds of debates, but the thing to remember is this was written a long time ago. The world has changed, and we need to change with it.
Yeah. Yeah, and change our the way we interpret it socially, you know, as a group.
All right. Well, you know what? We're out of time. We can't really take phone calls. I like to take phone calls. I like to hear people's interpretation. I like some answers to these questions because they are important to address, to hear from people, to get opinions. And, you know, the thing is, all the debates that we have had over this, it affects nothing as far as people who are into target shooting and hunting and whatever else. Affects absolutely none of that. All it does is put a cap on the growing armaments in people's basements and garages that are out of control. And I don't see how you can't agree with that, that it's out of control when you have situations like this where kids are literally afraid to go to school, or people are afraid to go to church or shopping malls or who knows where. This is not healthy, and it's not getting us anything. It's not getting us any more security or safety or democracy. So it seems to me that you can be the biggest gun enthusiast in the world and agree 100% with what we're saying here and not lose anything that you currently are able to do, you know, unless you like strutting around your home with an AR-15.
Yeah, it'll make a lot of meth dealers upset. Their trunks full of guns and paranoia just won't go as well with their lifestyle.
Okay, if you're a meth dealer, maybe there's a special license you can get so that you can have that. I don't know, or maybe hire a security firm or something. What, meth's not legal?
You're
wait, meth's not legal? But Breaking Bad was you're right, that wasn't legal, was it?
Your home has to be surrounded by 9 feet of sand. How about that?
There are things we can address these issues, all right? These are all things we can figure out, but we need to have a conversation. Hey, our conversation is done though. We're out of time. Write to us. Please write to us. People don't write. You know, people tweet, they don't write. We want to hear sentences. We want to read sentences. We want to hear voices, and we want to listen. And we could be completely wrong, too. We want to be open to that. OTW at 2600.com is our email address. OTW at 2600.com. Write to us. Feel free to go on at length. And we'll be happy to hear what you have to say. Maybe we'll even read it on the air.
Yes.
All right. For Off the Wall, this is Emmanuel.
And this is Smooth, Calm Kyle.
Calm Kyle.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like Calm Kyle.
Very calm.
See you next week.
Bye.
Your mind. Politics needs human beings. Politics needs lies. That's why, my friend, it's an evidence. Politics is violence. Why, my friend, it's an evidence. Politics is violence. Use drugs, politics use bombs, politics need torpedoes, politics needs blood. That's why, my friend, it's an evidence. Politics is violence. Why, my friend, it's an evidence. Politics is violence. Politics need force, politics need crime. Politics need ignorance. Politics need lies. Politics kills. 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 Cries. Politics need ignorance. Politics need lies. Politics need force. Politics need cries. Politics need ignorance. Politics need lies.
Hey kids, Finn with you, Finn's Revolution. Tonight, very, very special guest, Ben Vaughn of the Ben Vaughn Combo and many, many other incarnations will be talking to us about some new releases and some reissues he's just done. Fascinating character. And I'm going to keep going. Stay tuned. Yes, so this is the a new release of Instrumental Stylings from back in 95, and this is a new thing Ben Vaughn has just re-released, and it's a beautiful thing with bonus cuts and different versions, and it's one of my favorite Ben Vaughn albums, and I love the Ben Vaughn Combo records too, but just a great amount of output. And this is Aqua Blue, right here on WUSB Stony Brook from Ben Vaughn. Thank you.
Yeah, a little something from the new re-release of Ben Vaughan's album, Instrumental Stylings, which originally came out in 95. Really cool vibe, fantastic. So far ahead and yet behind of its time. And Ben Vaughan's going to be on the air with us in just a few moments. Meanwhile, here's a song called Pipe Bomb off that same album. Ben Vaughan, right here, WUSB Stony Brook.